The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday morning live on Lincoln's ESPN 1480. Mark Kranak alongside TJ Henning as Chris Schmidt is not with us today.
He's out west.
What's he doing?
He's out in the McCook area.
Okay. So western Nebraska.
Yeah, out west and seeing his grandfather for his 94th birthday, I believe.
I love discussing that, by the way. I know McCook actually really kind of is in central Nebraska, central western, but pretty much if it's outside the Omaha-Lincoln corridor, it's western Nebraska.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That includes Norfolk and Columbus, even though they're really not.
Ooh.
But I love doing that.
Yeah.
So he's in
I could say
in
that's
western
central,
Nebraska,
but yeah. Yeah, McCook is definitely west to me.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So good morning, TJ. We got the Elite Eight going now, and you look at the Big Ten's eliminated. Nobody in the Big Ten's left. It was close last night, and it kind of goes to chalk about what we heard all year, is that, oh, the Big Ten is down, the Big Ten is down. But, you know, Michigan had a nice run, Wisconsin had a nice run, but they both get eliminated, so nobody there is left out of the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I mean, they both lost by 1 point in Wisconsin
totally.
Last night. You know, they hit a runner to force it in overtime, and then they lose on a runner in overtime to Florida. But that was a very compelling game last night.
Which makes you wonder, like, you know, it gets to the whole, I guess, development angle and the identity angle. How the hell does Wisconsin do it? These guys have been to the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
What is it? Is that 4 years in a row now?
Believe so. I mean, they just
like,
don't beat
did
themselves,
you hear what I just
man.
Said?
Yeah,
they've been to the Sweet 16
Wisconsin
4 years
basketball.
In a row.
Yeah. I mean, you get that right coach in place who can just teach the fundamentals and recruit the right guys who aren't going to make the dumb plays and are just really solid, but they're not going to blow you away, but just make the solid plays. Like, you're going to be solid. You're going to be good. You're going to be the Sweet 16 4 years in a row.
And then look at what they do in football. I have Wisconsin envy. Is that okay to admit?
No, it is. I think they're a better University of Nebraska right now. I feel like they've stolen our formula for football, so I feel like they're a better us right now. And then they played Florida last night. Are those probably the two best football basketball schools, Florida and Wisconsin, right now, if you combine both those programs?
It's off the top of my head, it is very difficult to come up with somebody else.
Right.
It's very difficult. Well, you look at the Elite Eight right now. Xavier, Gonzaga,
no football.
Oregon, Kansas, South Carolina, Florida, Kentucky, North Carolina. Out of all those teams, none of those are good football schools. None of those.
Except Florida, maybe.
I got to admit, though, is it okay to have Wisconsin envy? Is that okay? Because, like...
I mean, they're your rival, but I don't, you know... I just feel like they're a better you right now.
I love the way they do things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, football, basketball, both. It's like, you know what it is about them, too? And think about the coaches that have gone. Even in basketball, you talked about getting the right coach.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, Bo Ryan just left a couple years ago, and now it's Gary Gard. Right? And then football coaches, that's a revolving door. They've had like 100 football coaches in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But you know what's been the same? Barry Alvarez.
Which is crazy. How does... you know what it speaks to, though? It speaks to... Barry has somehow... I don't know if it's through the coaches he's hired or whatever, but the impression you get when you watch Wisconsin athletics, and I'm speaking specifically about football and basketball, because, I mean...
Yeah.
Honestly, what else are you watching, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not watching
Wisconsin.
Do they even
swimming?
Have a wrestling team? I don't know. You know, I'm not talking about that. But there is so much player ownership when you watch Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Do you know? And it's hard to put your finger on.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to, like, but you know it when you see it. Like, those guys just have a way of going about things, regardless of who the coach is, in football and basketball. And it's like this supreme confidence, but it's not arrogance.
No, I agree. I think you see it in Nigel Hayes for the basketball team, and then for the football team, I think you see it in the linebackers, especially when you had those linebackers that were hurt this year. You saw them on the sideline acting like coaches with their teammates. Mm-hmm. It was incredible.
And those guys, they, I don't know, they just seem so certain in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy how that translates from football to basketball. Two entirely different programs, entirely different sports, but it's the same. It's the same mantra. It's
same
the same
model.
MO.
Yeah.
And it's, wow. It's something to behold. And you just hope, you know, when does Nebraska get back to that? When do they get back to that in actually both sports?
Mm-hmm.
Does Wisconsin, do you think Wisconsin has, okay, do you think they have better players in either sport? Football or basketball?
Maybe basketball, but talent-wise compared to football, no.
What do you mean by maybe basketball? Put it this way. Granted, Nigel Hayes is one of the better ones.
Yeah, I mean, Happ and Hayes are definitely more talented than the guys we have. But guys like Showalter...
More talented?
Nigel Hayes and Ethan Happ?
Do you think they're more talented? Okay. Put it this way. Imagine a game of one-on-one between Isaiah Roby and insert a one-on-one between Roby and Hayes. Roby would do okay, right? Like in terms of pure talent. I'm not talking about seasoning or,
well, you know, being just comparing those two bodies though, like Hayes could just bully Roby, so I have a hard time. I mean, but I get what you're saying. Talent-wise, Roby has it. But I think Hayes and Happ are both potential NBA guys. But guys like Showalter and Vito Brown, like, no, they don't have more talent than the guys we have.
No.
And football-wise, I feel like we are talent level equal to Wisconsin. But they're just better coached, it seems like, or they're more disciplined.
See, okay. This is where it gets interesting. I don't think it's even better coaching.
Okay.
I don't think it's better coaching. I don't think it's better talent. I think it is culture. It is pure culture. It's okay. when you show, from the outside looking in, I have no connections to Wisconsin. I'm not there. I don't know. What it appears to be like, though, is when you show up at Wisconsin as a freshman, there's a way of going about things.
Mm-hmm.
And that way is led entirely by the players. And the coach's job is just to sort of keep it on the rails. Right?
Yeah.
Like, keep it in check. But they got their own thing going on.
And I also think they're really good at player development. To me, they don't play a lot of freshmen or redshirt freshmen, especially on the offensive line. They're always playing seniors and juniors, but those guys who are redshirting know that they're going to be ready come their junior and senior year. That's why they're always stacked there. So I think they really do a great job with player development in football and in basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do it in both. Yeah, because how does Wisconsin rank in terms of basketball, like recruiting rankings? It can't be great.
Yeah, I mean, it's just average, I would say.
Yeah, it can't be great. It's incredible what they do from a cultural standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'm bringing this up because, you know, Riley caught a little flack from insiders. I don't know if it was widely talked about, but in his first year, generally speaking, he was considered, you know, he was considered a guy that he wasn't disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
Players were running amok. There was no discipline. That was kind of the heat that some insiders were saying, like, there's no discipline.
Yeah.
Players are doing whatever they want. They're showing up late to stuff. But
I feel like some of that too might be some guys were still feeling loyal to Bo and they didn't want to hear what Riley had to say.
Right. I don't know, the So what people are saying though is, okay, so there's no discipline. Players are running amok, and it was being critical of Riley. It was saying he doesn't have control of the program. He's not handling business the right way. The players aren't disciplined. And on its surface, that seems bad, right? You're just sort of like, that's not good. He needs to get a hold of that program, blah, blah, blah. But if you look a little deeper, it appears it was intentional on his part. He's like, no, I'm not going to be the strict teacher mm-hmm. that slaps everybody's hand every time they do something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They need to figure it out for themselves. They need to take control of it. They need to be accountable to themselves. It's almost like he, from what I can tell anyways, it seems like he's trying to institute something pretty similar to what Wisconsin has, which is a player-led thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a disciplinarian.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be the complete opposite of what Bo was. He was going to get in your face and let you know that you messed up. Riley, you're going to mess up and you're going to learn from it on your own.
And what do you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to be, players? How do you want to go about it? Because, look, you cannot say, I'm sorry. Look, they've had Bielema, they've had Gary Anderson, now they got Paul Christ. They've been through all kinds of coordinators. That doesn't matter. Wisconsin hasn't changed at all, no matter who's been coaching them, because of their culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if this year, for the most part, the Bo days are over. For the most part. There's obviously some holdovers, guys that Bo recruited or whatever. But generally speaking, this is entirely Riley's team.
Mm-hmm.
How will we know and will we see that culture take hold? The culture, the player-led culture. To where it doesn't matter if it's Riley as the coach. It doesn't matter if Langsdorf's the coordinator, because they hold themselves to certain standards.
Mm-hmm.
That's Wisconsin's secret. Right? Like, there's no question about it. That's their secret.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think those guys would be for Nebraska? Because one that comes to mind for me would be Kyron Williams.
In what way? What do you mean? What
about holding guys accountable, not being afraid to voice his opinion. Like when we had Kyron Williams in our studio along with Graham Nabity the day after Sam Foltz passed away, and I could just see the leaderness oozing from that guy. So I feel like he's a guy people would listen to.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because he's being kind of marginalized on the depth chart, right?
It is.
You know, and you wonder what that'll do.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about that safety position. I've never understood why Kyron doesn't get. He's like Rodney Dangerfield. You know? Like, no respect. I mean, the guy, he's second leading tackler and team leader at interceptions, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And he's staring at being maybe third on the depth chart.
Yeah, I know when it first came out, he was second. So.
Yeah, but then they moved Kalu over.
That's right. Yeah.
So
we'll see how long that lasts. But yeah, he'd be third.
But I wonder if we'll see that this year, though. I wonder if we'll see a player-led team where they're – and it's so difficult to, like, pinpoint. It's mm-hmm. so difficult to
– Nick Gates is another guy that comes to mind for me.
Yeah. Well, and this goes right in line to Hail Varsity right now. It's the third year in a row for the State of Husker Nation poll, which is a great poll. It's awesome because you can measure it year over year.
Mm-hmm.
What it's been the same questions. It's the exact same questions that have been going on for 3 years now. Where you're measuring questions like how do you define success for Nebraska? Is that winning the division? Is it winning the conference? Is it winning a national title? Getting to the playoffs? You know, how likely do you think in the next 5 years it is for Nebraska to do either of those things? Who do you consider the face of Nebraska football? That one, oh my God.
That's a tough one.
Oh, man. I mean, 2 years ago, easy. You know, so some of those questions were not difficult. you know, Amir Abdullah, right? Like when he was a senior, mm-hmm. obviously he's the face. You know, Tommy Armstrong, love him or hate him, he was the face.
Yep.
Right? This year, what's your answer there? Oh. I couldn't believe how long it took me to answer that question.
No, I feel like everybody's saying the same thing. This is like a doozy of a question this year.
Who's the face of Nebraska football this year? No, really. Answer that question. It's a multiple choice. Do you have anybody from the roster that you can pick? I ended up selecting Stanley Morgan.
Okay.
But I didn't feel great about it.
Mm-hmm. So here's my answer, and it's off the wall. I don't think it's a player. I think it's a coach, and I think it's Bob Diaco. I think with the new defense, the energy he's bringing, I think he's going to be the face of the program for this coming season. If I had to choose right now, because no one player stands out to me right now. If I had to choose a player, which current player, I'd probably choose the winner between Tanner Lee and Patrick O'Brien. I think that would be the face of the Husker program. But we don't know who that is right now, so I'm going a little bit off the wall here, and I'd pick Bob Diaco.
That's fair. He has the most intrigue. I can't wait to watch that defense.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be Wisconsin-like? Going back to the Wisconsin envy?
Yeah.
I feel guilty saying it, but it's true. I have total Wisconsin envy. When you watch those guys, you're like, you know what? Those dudes have a puncher's chance in any game they play.
And hey, aren't they wearing our school colors? They look just like us, but they're better than us right now. Yeah, it's frustrating. Envy is the right word.
Is that how Nebraska's going to start rolling? Is the player-led culture going to start taking hold this year? I don't know.
Needed to.
I guess we'll see.
I guess, and then if I really had to answer this right now, spring with no quarterback being answered, I'd probably say Nick Gates would be the face of the football program as of March 25th right now. That would probably be my answer. But I'm still going with the off-the-wall Bob Diaco.
Which is crazy. You're talking about a junior left tackle that got schooled.
Yeah.
By Derek Barnett.
Well, that Barnett guy's pretty good now, Kranak.
Well, he is, but, you know, but that's your face?
Yeah, no.
A left tackle's the face of your program?
That's why this question was so tough.
You can take it now. You go to hailvarsity.com and take the survey. You have a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card when you answer it. But it'll be cool. And we'll have Brandon Vogel at the top of the hour to discuss it. But it's pretty cool because you can see the trends of how Husker Nation is perceiving their team year on year on those same questions. In the Hail Varsity Rewind, Charlie McBride, former defensive coordinator, is going to join us. He talked to Chris earlier this week, and he's going to talk specifically about what do you do over spring break? Because it's kind of it's a unique situation where the players come back, they go hard for what, 6 practices, and then just boom, they get a week off out of nowhere.
Yeah,
spring
go to Cancun
break, and then they're coming
kid.
Back. But that's not without precedent. That's happened before at Nebraska, and Charlie McBride will shed a little light on that. Mark Kranak and TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt not in today. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Mark Skurs. You are?
TJ_Henning.
Hit us up. Charlie McBride when we come back. Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It is that time, Mondays with Charlie, Black Shirt Charlie, Coach McBride with us, brought to you by your friends at Emeritus. Don't be distracted. No one likes to be distracted. If you find yourself preoccupied by financial concerns, Emeritus can help you find that focus. Emeritus, helping protect your loved ones with disability insurance, life insurance, and investment planning, 130 years and counting, giving you peace of mind. Proud to stand with the Huskers, proud to bring you Coach Charlie McBride. Coach, how we doing?
Doing great. I'm just getting mentally ready to make the move. And it's like, It's like stressful. It's like getting ready for a game almost.
Yeah, right? You're getting packed up. You're getting ready to make the move to Michigan. And
I'm
going to need some advice from you about moving because I think we're going to pack up here in about a month. So.
Well, listen, have a good time and plan ahead. Let's put it that way.
We need some second half adjustments, right?
That's right. You do.
Coach, spring ball is on a bit of a hiatus. Nebraska on spring break. And as the week kind of wound down last week, final practice was Thursday. And I want to start with Joshua Kalu, really talented corner. Saw some time at a nickel spot last year, long and lanky. He's the talent out of the Houston area, and he got a look-see at safety. Nebraska has so many bodies at safety. You have Aaron Williams and Kyron Williams that saw a lot of time last year. But what are your thoughts here as you look at Kalu and maybe getting a look-see, an experiment at safety? Nothing set in stone, obviously, but he's got a great frame.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's a senior, so the thing is he knows what he's doing a little bit on the field. He'll have to learn, you know, the defenses pretty much, but as far as playing the corner position and being a kid that's a pretty good hitter, you know, and moving in and being able to play safety is really, really a plus. I mean, it's a plus for him down the road if he goes to the next level also. And I think that, you know, if the game time comes and, you know, some of these young guys that haven't played, they may look good in practice and everything, but when they get in the game, they're a different cat. And so you got to always be careful that and not overlook somebody or, you know, think that that one person is going to do it and it'll be his first year. That's pretty much the tough part, especially playing on that second level at linebacker in the safety. Defensive linemen will get away with murder, you know. But anyway, I think the young people are, you know, what you're really looking for. Now, they're right now with being in break, I can tell you, they're up there in meetings arguing with each other and doing all the normal stuff coaches do. You know, some kids have one feeling about a kid, some have another. But you usually get down to the right decision. And if you have the head coach, you got this position coach, then you got the coordinator and so on and so forth, I think you can make pretty good decisions on the young people. At this part is a good time to break. A lot of people don't like to break up and do that, but I think that the stuff they've learned, are they going to be able to have it all in down what they've learned next week? And that'll tell them a little something about, you know, whether one kid needs more repetitions than the other or one kid picked it up really well and so on and so forth.
Coach, I want to some more time on this, on the secondary for a quick second, and that's the thought with Coach Elliott and Coach Diaco getting the best five on the field. There may be some overlap with guys who've played certain spots, but the plan to look at your safeties right now, you look at Kalu, you look at Aaron Williams, both your safeties, and then at corner, Chris Jones has kind of taken the leadership role of that secondary. He's the kid out of Florida, the cornerback that's been really, really talented. And then the really the prized recruit that saw time, didn't redshirt, and that's Lamar Jackson, as he's getting used to the college level and the play of cornerback. Who you have at nickel, because you have Aaron Williams that played that a bit last year. Kalu can do it. And then you have options with Kyron Williams or some of the new pups, younger guys, and Antonio Reed and JoJo Doman. Plus Lee is another corner that's done well. So as you look at this roster and the secondary spots, being able to ask guys to maybe be uncomfortable or try something new to get your best five on the field, is that a tough conversation you had to have with players?
I think you're in the same boat you are at any position. You need to be sure two teams are ready to play, and maybe a third, even a few guys that really know what they're doing, the young guys. But, you know, I think Bobby Elliott has been around the horn a few times. And I think he's the kind of guy that could walk out on the field and have two practices and have a good idea who can do what, so on and so forth. That's the big plus that they made with that hire. And, you know, it's rather than maybe some younger guy. But But he will make the right decisions. I mean, he's he's had some good head coaches he's worked under, and I think that'll really help them overall. Every kid should be playing as though he's going to start in practice.
Okay.
And I think that's pretty much the thing you try to convey to them. That you never know when somebody's going to get hurt or do anything. And if the backup people aren't ready to go. The other thing is, if you get in a long series or something and a guy needs to come out of there, he's been running deep a couple of times or something, then you got guys that you're not afraid to put in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to, over this week right now, they're making some of those decisions because they're going to have to kind of come up with some hardcore decisions when they come back, because they want to try to get the people in the right spot so those last 2 weeks are really good practices.
Coach, anything different that you maybe foresee the secondary being asked to do in a 3-4 versus what they were doing in the 4-3?
Well, I think our strong safety, if you go back, was probably our leading tackler, and as our defense went, you have a normal seven-man front, and he was the eighth man. He'd rotate out if it was a run, and he was able to make tackles and see where the ball is, and if something popped loose, he was there. And so that goes. Now, if you're playing a lot of two deep or something, that's not a great run defense.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be if you disguise it and you do some things off of it, with your corners, and maybe come with some heat and things like that. But I think it all goes back to what the safeties are doing. You know, normally when you're playing zone, your corners are pretty. They don't have to be wizards. You got number one. Okay? And then you go inside, that guy may have two, three, so on and so forth. So, you don't know, but the inside guys are the guys that really have to be on top of what's going on, and the front has to fit, or the linebackers have to fit the coverage. If a linebacker doesn't do his job, the secondary can look bad.
Right.
And the people don't know that, and that's where that's where you have some problem with the fan part of it.
Mm.
So, but otherwise, I think you need who's your fourth guy out of the secondary. Is it going to be your corner? Is it going to be one of your safeties or whatever the case is? And fourth play on the outside or so forth. And all of those things, and I don't know their coverages, but, I'm sure that they have coverages where their safeties are involved in run support right away and things like that, and corners will be too.
Hmm.
A lot of times they'll rotate the defense. It'll look like cover two, but they rotate, and it ends up being cover three, actually, with a double cover on the outside guy. Because the corner doesn't, if you rotate to his side, the corner doesn't go. He stays in that area. The safety rolls over the top, and then you have the other one in the middle. Kind of put the last guy in the... hang them out to dry.
Those guys got to have short memories or no memories.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the biggest thing of all. I learned early that if a kid gets beat deep, a lot of people are very, very negative about it and things like that. And I always looked at it this way, is that I know one thing, he's trying as hard as he can, and that's all you can ask. And hug his neck rather than chew him out or make him feel worse than he already feels.
Yeah. Mondays with Charlie, Mr. Blankshirt, Charlie McBride, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, we're spending a lot of time on safeties, and one of my favorites watching him, and I know one of your favorites, Mike Brown. Let's spend a couple of minutes on Mr. Mike Brown. Great career in the NFL, phenomenal Husker. And with Mike Brown, did you know immediately he kind of had that it factor?
Yeah, he was a backup his first year.
Mm-hmm.
Now Ralph at corner started his first year, though.
Yeah,
played every game, but Mike came in the second year, but played a lot at first year, and we were really confident in the position because he is so smart. When the pro scouts came in, and you know, these guys, sometimes a coach will say something stupid, and I probably said something stupid, but it was truthful. I said, when he gets there, he will, in a couple of weeks, be running your secondary.
Wow.
He'll know where everybody lines up. He'll know where everybody's supposed to be. And a guy called me on the phone from the Bears and said, man, you're right. He's doing it already. You know, he's helping out the older guys. I said, I'm telling you now, that was one of his pluses. If he was a bigger person, you know, he probably would be illegal. And I think injuries, head injuries, and a couple of them kind of forced him out a little bit, which was a good thing for him, I think.
Yeah. Well, Mike was so so dynamic with that black shirt defense and just the ability to tackle in space and then stop the run. I mean, he was something special.
That's one of the things that I think, you know, a lot of people work on it. They can work on it. But a lot of people can have to really, really pay attention to what's doing. And Mike was one of those guys that already came here. He could tackle in the open field already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that was a pretty good. Tim Beck, I don't know if you know this, but was Mike's high school coach.
Tim,
and
really?
At Saguaro High School in, out here in Arizona. You know, so you know darn well he had come from a graduate assistantship, I think, at Iowa State was where he was. But he did a great job out here. And, you know, I know Mike talked a lot about how confident he felt. You know, he made him feel confident. You know, that's something I think that, you know, it just comes with a coach's, you know, how he talks to players and so forth. And he was able to do that with Mike. So in high school, so he came here with a great background, probably with a coach that was ahead of himself and that he cared deeply about. Because Mike was Offensive Player of the Year here in the state and Defensive Player of the Year here in the state. So you can tell what kind of athlete he was.
Did you have to... Did he want to play defense when he came here?
Oh yeah, it was not a problem. I mean, he took. In fact, I don't know that even that was what basically. I think that I think Ron Brown recruited him. I think I went down there once, and it was really funny because I got a phone call from the principal, and he said, "The coach, you need to come down here and just to meet this kid, and so on and so forth." So I went down there. The principal happened to play for me at Arizona State. He was a guard. I was coaching the offensive line, Herman Snurgenes. And so I'm sure Herman helped a little bit out in the long run because he really felt good about Nebraska at the time.
There's been a lot of celebrations this past weekend in the NCAA tournament, locker room shots, a lot of joy. Is there a specific locker room celebration that you remember?
Well, I think a couple of games stand out probably in me is our first national championship. That was... Everybody was jumping on each other and squeezing and hugging each other and things like that. I mean, you couldn't hardly get in the locker room without getting torched. You know, I mean, it was crazy, you know, that kind of thing. But I think in 99, when we beat Texas for the Big 12 championship, you know, kids get happy about winning big games, but they realize that on Sunday they can rest, but Monday it's a whole new show, and that's out the window. And you have to, whether you made mistakes or played well or played bad, you've got a whole new record coming right now. You just got to turn it on right. That, as far as celebration, that's some of the big things. Of course, both national championships were special. Mm. You know, in fact, in 97 was too. I don't think you can go back in a season and say there was one that was better than the other.
Sure.
Exactly. But those three, you'll never forget them. Because here's the thing. You don't have another game, and you can look at their faces, and that pays you your salary.
Yeah.
I mean, how these kids react to each other, and, you know, that's what coaching's all about.
Charlie McBride with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, we'll catch up with you next week, and enjoy your road trip, okay?
Okay. Well, I hope it isn't snowing up there. then I'll have to change my whole attitude. Okay, well, listen, Chris, thank you very much, and good talking to you, and I'll talk to you next week.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Hail Varsity Radio continues on a Saturday morning. Mark Kranach alongside TJ Heyman. We are back live this morning. You can join us on the phone lines 466-3776 or 2466-3776. Talking Wisconsin Envy. Our thanks to Charlie McBride, who joined Hail Varsity Radio earlier in the week and reminisced a little bit about Mike Brown. Probably my favorite all-time Husker, got to be honest.
Hmm.
Pretty close to it. I'm trying to think of the time that Mike Brown pissed me off or disappointed me, and I can think of zero times. Like, it just never happened. The dude just tackled everything and everybody. He was fantastic.
I think that was my sister's favorite player was Mike Brown.
He was a different level. Completely different level. So we're talking Wisconsin Envy this morning. We're talking State of Husker Nation. The poll is live right now on HailVarsity.com. Third year in a row where Brandon Vogel and company are taking the pulse of Husker Nation with these exact same questions to try to get an understanding of the sentiment of Husker Nation,
mm-hmm.
to see how they're feeling about their team. And with Wisconsin getting eliminated last night, you brought it up in the first segment, TJ, like between Wisconsin and Florida, are those the best two football/basketball schools? And I think we could take it even somewhere else. Is Wisconsin, here's the thing, this is, and they're in Nebraska's division, okay, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Are they the best athletic program for men's sports?
Hmm.
When I say that, it sounds kind of ridiculous, because I think, and I'm pretty similar. You sort of have this impression of Wisconsin of being like, they're pretty good.
Well, I feel
they're
like
pretty good.
I feel like
then you look at it and you're like, no. These dudes have been to the Final Four or to the Sweet 16 4 years in a row.
So when you're talking men's sports, is it just football and basketball? Because you know they have that Capital One Athletic Cup where, like, the team with the most conference championships or national championships for each men or women's team, like, usually that's like a Pac-12 school, like a Stanford
Yeah, that was the stuff that Bill Byrne was big into, the Sears Cup or whatever. Mm-hmm. And no, I'm not talking about that.
Just football, basketball. Okay.
Football, basketball. And hey, you can extend it to, you know, their volleyball team's pretty good and all that. You know, they don't have a baseball team. So that is one thing that Nebraska has on Wisconsin. The baseball program is much better because they don't have a program. That certainly helps. But think about this. So this is a team in Nebraska's division. They have been to the Sweet 16 4 years in a row. They went to the Final Four twice.
They played the national championship 2 years ago.
Right? And then in football, they're the standard bearer for right now. It's the West. It used to be Legends or Leaders or whatever, mm-hmm. but they're the standard bearer. They've been to the conference championship game multiple times. They are I'm being serious here. Are they the best athletic program? Football, basketball, the only sports that really matter. Let's be honest. Like, who's better? Combination football, basketball, who is better than Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, example I brought up earlier was the team they played last night, Florida. They're pretty good in both, but I would still lean Wisconsin in that. USC might be rising. They are certainly rising in basketball, and they seem to be rising in football with Sam Darnold there, but I would still pick Wisconsin over them right now. I mean, yeah. You're right, man. Wisconsin envy. They're just better right now.
Yet their reputation is that of, they're pretty good. You know, they're overachievers. Good for Wisconsin. Give them a nice little clap. As good job. No. They're elite. That's who Nebraska is. Chase, and you think of all the football programs, there's what, 129, something like that, 128
yep.
Division I programs. And Nebraska happens to be in this 7-team division with those guys, with probably the best athletic program in the nation. Hey, tell me somebody better. I'm open to it. Who? Seriously, who?
No,
think through the SEC, ACC.
Like you
Florida
go Kansas,
State,
Kentucky for basketball, but not at all for football. The SEC,
yeah, Florida State,
you'll think
Florida
of football.
State maybe, but they're kind of up and down in hoops.
Mm-hmm.
But Wisconsin is always there.
They are.
They're legit. Tough out. Hoops, football, every year, have been for damn near the past decade. And they've gone through 138 coaches. Doesn't matter. It's all about the culture. It's
impressive.
And so, but here's TJ. You say all this because they have a direct impact on. So, Husker fans obviously have this expectation of being able to compete for the division, and obviously for the conference. When you compete for the division, you can obviously mm-hmm. compete for the conference. But that's who they're up against. They're up against literally the best program in America. I mean, basically. Is that overstating it? Like, that's who Nebraska has to unseat.
Yeah, I feel like it is maybe a little bit, but just because you feel like you're in the West Division and it shouldn't be that tough, but then you think of all the success Wisconsin has had, and it's like, man, they are pretty tough to unseat.
And so how does that affect how you perceive Nebraska in the first place, where hey, Nebraska could get 9 or 10 wins? They could do a good job, but until they knock off those dudes, it's almost academic and almost doesn't matter. Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday morning. Brandon Vogel, Gary Sharp will join us next. Mark Kranak alongside TJ Henning. Chris Schmidt is out. We will talk to you for hour number two next.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Hour number two of Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday morning. Good morning, Mark Kranak alongside TJ Henning. Chris Schmidt is away today. He's out in western Nebraska. Which I don't look on the map too much about Nebraska. If it's outside of Omaha and Lincoln, it's western Nebraska.
True that.
But I think McCook really is, actually. So, something like that. Maybe central Nebraska. I don't know. Where is McCook? Have you been to McCook? I've never been to McCook.
I don't believe I've been to McCook. I've been to Gothenburg, and I know that's out west. I think it might be more out west than McCook. But McCook is still pretty west of me. Maybe it's southwest, a little south.
Something like that. And our next guest, Brandon Vogel, managing editor of Hail Varsity. You're from out west, right, Brandon? What city are you from?
I'm from the village of Hemmingford, Nebraska. Which
why do they call it a village?
Because it's village sized. That may not be its official name, but yeah. So that's about 45 minutes from the Wyoming border. So you want to talk about west?
Yeah. So would you consider McCook west?
I would. It's not in the panhandle, so you can still go further west, but it's all the way butted up almost against Colorado. So yeah, on the bottom half of Nebraska, it's about as west as you can get.
Okay, this makes sense. Hey, we've been talking about Wisconsin envy this morning, and I'm sort of freaking out a little bit now. But I know that I'm envious of Wisconsin and their program, but would this surprise you? Listen to this. 15 years in a row, those dudes have been to the NCAA tournament and a bowl game. When I say that, does that surprise you? Like, that's shocking. 15 well, years in a row.
It did early in the week when I heard somebody else say it. So, it's kind of hard to believe. I haven't done it yet. I meant to look at their football win totals because I don't think, you know, there was that 2012 year where they were, 7-5 going into that game when they played Nebraska. But not a lot of low win totals either. We're not talking about sneaking into a bowl game with six wins a whole lot of the time, I don't think. So pretty impressive. Like, Wisconsin justifiably, when you look at the two main revenue sports of football and men's basketball, could probably be the envy of a lot of fan bases at a lot of different schools. It's tough to replicate that sort of consistency.
Me and Kranek were talking earlier. We know they have a lot of coaching changes, yet they're still stable. Do you think it has to do with the culture and the player accountability up there? I mean, Barry Alvarez has done quite a job up there.
Well, you know, that's sort of the tough thing to explain about this. You know, with basketball, maybe it's a little bit easier because you had Bo Ryan for most of that stretch here until the end, and then he sort of handpicked his successor, which is never a guarantee that things are going to work, but so far it looks like it has worked for Wisconsin on the basketball side. Football's interesting when you look at the number of different coaches who have been through there recently. Why do they keep trucking on, like, without missing a beat? And I don't know. I mean, maybe there is some sort of athletic department-wide culture thing going on from Barry Alvarez on down, but I just think that sort of thing's kind of hard to get to, because you don't want to have an athletic director that's so involved that these coaches come here and feel like they can't do what they, you know, coach the way they want to coach. But something's definitely going on up there.
Six of the past 7 years they've been in the Sweet 16. What? And here's the thing, they're kind of sneaky about it because they've never won a national title. But is it ridiculous to say they are the premier men's program, revenue generating sports, like you were saying, football and basketball? They are the premier program in the country, all things considered.
Yeah. There's some Florida might jump in there when you look at their basketball success. Won national titles with both football and basketball in the previous decade. Michigan occasionally approaches that, I think, although they haven't quite. Well, nobody's been as consistent as Wisconsin has. So I think you can probably give them that title for now.
Unbelievable. How does that? Okay. And the state of the Husker Nation poll is out, and I want to get into that with you. But how should that, or how does that, how should that affect Nebraska's fans' perception of success when that is, like, we're talking about arguably the premier program in the nation is in your division. So you know what I mean? So how much should that factor in to what Nebraska fans' expectations are of Nebraska?
It could maybe give Husker fans a little bit of additional context, but I just don't think fandom works that way that often. And you know, in some ways, the example of Wisconsin might be more problematic than someplace else, because Nebraska fans, I think, look at Wisconsin and say, well, they're not located in what you would call a plum spot in terms of recruiting for either sport, have a little bit better proximity to recruits than Nebraska. There's just more population around Wisconsin. But the fact that two teams' uniforms are virtually indistinguishable may sort of subconsciously factor in there as well. But I think for Nebraska fans in particular, they look at Wisconsin and say, well, if they can do it, then Nebraska can do it. That's different if, you know, we give the title to Florida. That's obviously a very different discussion. So, you could, as a Husker fan, be like, well, there's no shame in losing to Wisconsin. Look what they've done. And that wouldn't be an inaccurate thought. I just think the tendency for a fan is to more to look at it and say, well, we need to do that. Whatever they're doing, give us some of that.
So, speaking of Phantom and the State of Husker Nation poll that you guys put out on HailVarsity.com, which I suggest people go take the survey of, one of my favorite questions was, you know, national media pundits think that Husker fans have unrealistic expectations for their school. I'm really curious how that's going to play out. What do you think about that one?
I'm interested, too. That's a new question for this year. You know, so a lot of the value of doing this year after year is keeping most of the questions the same.
Yeah.
Then you've got the same results to compare against each other year over year. But we always try to come up with questions that are, you know, a lot of it's just sort of staff discussions. Like, what are people talking about? What are people thinking about? What sort of things do we want answers for? And, you know, that one, I think, it may have come right on the heels of, you know, another one of those sort of national stories where they're essentially saying Nebraska fans need to temper their expectations. It's been 10 years of sort of getting lost in the wilderness without a conference title. So that'll be an interesting one. I mean, you can kind of figure that people are going to perceive themselves as mm-hmm. not being unrealistic for the most part. That's sort of your base setting. But it'll be interesting to see exactly how the breakdown goes there.
Brandon Vogel, managing editor for Hail Varsity, joining us on the Hail Varsity radio show. How long is the Husker Nation poll going to be up? Like, how soon do people have to, how long do they have to take it?
Yeah, it's going to be up for another couple of weeks. Probably the week before, the week leading into the spring game, we'll probably shut it off midweek, but still leaving that date open a little bit. So we've got a couple of weeks to get in there and do that.
It's on HailVarsity.com. You can click it and take it, and that you'll publish the results and compare year over year. You know, one question that came up that I was surprisingly a struggle was, who is the face of Nebraska football in 2017? That was hard, man. Like, I ended up settling on Stanley Morgan, but I didn't feel good about it. Like,
yeah.
As you think about it, what would you say?
Yeah, that's another one where, as a staff, we were trying to come up with the answer to that, and we couldn't. So that's always a good indication. Well, let's ask people. I think it's probably going to end up being somebody on the defensive side, although Stanley Morgan's probably your best bet offensively, or maybe the quarterback, you know, depending on what level of play you get out of there. It's easy to default to the quarterback. But I think I picked Mick Stoltenberg. I think he's going to have a big year, in-state kid, which always gives you a little bit of a boost, I think, in this sort of discussion. And a guy who's, you know, everyone knows him. He's so physically imposing that he just kind of screams a little bit of Nebraska. So if he has the kind of year statistically, and as a player, that I think he will, it's a little bit of a projection on my part, but that's who I went with.
So as of March 25th, I chose Nick Gates as my guy for the Husker program, but I think by the season end, it's going to be whoever comes down between Tanner Lee and Patrick O'Brien. But I think for the real face of the program right now, it's not a player to me, it's a coach, and it's Bob Diaco, bringing in the 3-4 defense and his enthusiasm. And in the magazine, you recently wrote a column here, Bet on Bob, about the Pythagorean theorem, point differential, and how teams that change their defensive coordinator still do well. So I feel like what you wrote here and what I'm alluding to is that Diaco could be what makes this the season be different.
I absolutely agree. I debated whether or not to include coaches in the little drop down menu of options for that, because I think a coach could be, for simplicity's sake, we decided just to keep it to players. But, you know, more than, not only can you sort of come from, so Nebraska in terms of Pythagorean wins is not a team that's going to be projected to increase its total. And, you know, there's never been any long-term study that sort of proves the predictive value of these. There's just a kind of a correlation there. And you see people, whether they're referring to it directly or not, kind of take it into account when they're discussing sweeper teams, et cetera. But, you know, a lot of teams so that were in that group where Nebraska's at now, the thing that sort of got them over the hump, actually allowed them to increase their win totals in those seasons, was a new defensive coordinator. So it's kind of this trend I've continued to dig into. Well, I'm kind of looking at all facets of Diaco because I'm kind of fascinated with it for a potential yearbook story, but that's definitely one of them. I think he could be the main thing. You know, you look at this season and say, okay, Nebraska's going to win. They're going to be predicted to win 7 or 8 games. How do you bump that total? if the defense comes out and is significantly better as a top 20, top 15 scoring defense or something like that, I think that's one of those ways that you wouldn't necessarily predict right now, but isn't totally unfeasible.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. One of the questions in the, or actually two of the questions in the poll are, do you expect Nebraska's offense to improve? Do you expect Nebraska's defense to improve? Third year in a row I've taken it. I've answered yes every year to both questions. Because it always seems like that's going to be the case. Do you see from looking at the numbers, is that pretty consistent with Husker fans really expecting both to improve every year?
I haven't looked back at them yet and compared, you know, what we've gotten in. We've had a pretty good response in terms of numbers so far. So thank you for everyone who's filled out the poll at this point. But yeah, that's kind of why that one's there. It's a little bit, you know, and once you stack some years up and have a little bit more data, you can kind of see, well, here people just trend towards optimism. If we get another year, because I think last year, it was both were up over 80% in terms of thinking the offense would be better, defense would be better. Now, it was a little bit of a unique year because it was year two, Mike Riley. So we'll see where those go now. Hiring Diaco, obviously, I think people will be really bullish on the defense. But it'll be really interesting to see with the offense because there's not a lot of reason, I don't think, based on returning talent and what people have actually seen firsthand, to really predict the offense to be better. That said, you look at some of their Big Ten stats, it's almost, well, they can't score less than 20 points a game. I mean, if they do, they're in big trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the offense was bad last year.
It really was. And, you know, particularly what you got out of that first month season, you start to look at some of these advanced stats stuff. I think I wrote about this last month or something. One I saw was projecting Nebraska's scoring offense to decrease by 6 points a game. I was like, well, if they do that, they're scoring 14 points a game. It's hard to only score 14 points a game in today's college football, no matter who you are.
Hey, folks, this poll is not part of the Save Husker Nation poll, but it's just a poll on the front page of the HailVarsity.com website. Which position is your greatest concern for 2017? And we were just talking about the offense, and by far and away, the biggest concern people are voting for is 64% say the offensive line. Not too surprising there, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, not too. Well, I mean, it might be a little surprising in terms of returning. It got four starters back. Now, it indicates to me that people aren't necessarily thrilled with maybe all four of those starters. And I think there's enough young talent behind there to allay some of those concerns, at least for me personally. Like, I think Nebraska's offensive line has the potential to be pretty good. How good it ends up being, however, which is sort of a separate question, is one of the defining elements of this 2017 season for me. Now, you could say that's kind of always the case. If you're good on the offensive line, you have a chance to be pretty good. See also Wisconsin. But, you know, it feels particularly important in a year where you're going to a new quarterback, whoever it may be, and you're losing that running threat back there for a lot of it.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Managing editor talking State of Husker Nation survey, which is up right now on HailVarsity.com. And, you know, it is interesting about the offensive line. That is the biggest concern. 64% of respondents right now on the poll are saying that is by far their biggest concern. To me, that's almost unfounded, though. They're all back. Like, everybody's back except arguably the poorest performing player. Hate to say that, but just saying, Dylan Utter had his detractors, and they're all back. Like that, to me, that's my least concern. Outside of the offensive line, who take them off the table? Who would you say is your biggest concern, or which position group?
Probably wide receiver. Even though I like the returning players and also the incoming talent there, I think there's just so much up in the air with that group at this point that you have to wonder about that a little bit. It's close for me between that and running back. We know all of the players coming back for running back, so sort of similar to the offensive line. You know who you've got coming back. It's just a matter of, okay, which one of these guys, or is it a combination of guys, can really be a threat to opposing defenses back there consistently. And we just haven't seen that happen quite enough yet for me to feel real good about it. And sort of the crazy thing about this is so we've gone through the three choices on offense so far. Nobody has mentioned quarterback, which none of us really have seen. Well, we haven't seen any of these guys play in a Nebraska uniform before. Unless you watched a lot of Tulane football 2 years ago, you probably haven't seen very much of Tanner Lee. So
everybody watches Tulane football. What are you talking about?
This one's for either of you guys. To me, the offensive line is the biggest question mark for me, next to the defensive line. Like, I only feel good about Gates and Foster. This is for either of you guys. You guys feel that good about the offensive line? I mean, running-wise, I don't feel that great. Pass protection-wise, I think they can be okay, but, like, trying to pound the rock, I don't feel great about that squad right now.
Farmer gets no love. Why does Tanner Farmer get no love?
It's a good question. I would throw him in the mix in terms of guys I feel good about. I also feel pretty good about Cole Conrad at right tackle, if he were to end up winning that job. Kind of came on really strong late last year. So, but I think you're right, TJ. Like, it just is a matter of, are you going to be at the end of the year say, well, this offensive line was a strength of the team? I think that's where Nebraska needs to be at this year. You know, this also might be an interesting one if you could do this poll across multiple fan bases. I wonder if Nebraska fans sort of trend towards offensive line. Like, if you were to ask this question year after year after year, and come up across all the permutations of returning talent out there, is offensive line sort of going to be consistently towards the top? That might be the case.
Brandon Vogel, managing editor for Hail Varsity. Brandon, thanks a bunch for your time this morning, man. We'll talk to you next weekend.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Brandon.
All right, Brandon Vogel from Hail Varsity. And go online, take the poll, State of Husker Nation poll. And coming up next, Gary Sharp will join us, the Iron Horse, on Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out. Excellent strategy, sir.
Hail Varsity Radio rolls on a Saturday morning. Mark Kranak alongside TJ Henning. Chris Schmidt is out. He's out in southwestern Nebraska in McCook this morning, but he'll be back with us next week. And Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, now joins us. Gary, welcome. Have you been to McCook before?
I have been to McCook one time, long time ago. I thought you were going to say that Schmitty, like happens with Friday night concerts at Pinnacle, lost his voice at the Billy Joel concert.
See, I think that's a part of this deal. Yeah, he went to the Billy Joel concert. He randomly texted me yesterday, "Name me 10 Billy Joel songs." I can only come up with 4 off the top of my head. How many can you come up with? Just top your head.
Gosh, I could probably get to 5 or 6. I saw him a long time ago in concert. He puts on a heck of a show for a guy of his age. But yeah, I could probably get you 5, 6.
I could have gave you 1 before some people told me some. But yeah, we didn't start the fire was the only one I knew.
You of course remember Uptown Girl.
Yeah, once I heard Uptown Girl and he did Piano Man, I was like, oh, okay, he did those. I now know.
What the hell were you doing in McCook? Like, why does one go to McCook? I understand going there to see family. That makes sense, but why would you, Gary Sharp, go to McCook?
Well, my days back at UNL, I had a roommate who was from McCook.
Ah, okay.
And so he said, "Do you want to see my hometown?" And so, randomly, on a weekend, went to McCook.
And what are your lasting impressions and memories of McCook?
Very nice people. Very nice people, and probably don't see myself in my lifetime living in McCook, unfortunately.
Okay, that's fair. Hey, we're talking about Wisconsin envy this morning, and it sounds ridiculous to say because they haven't won a national title, but in terms of football-basketball combination, are they the premier program in America?
I would say they are right now, yes, slightly ahead of Michigan State.
Throw Michigan State in there. Okay, that makes sense.
And I think both of them have the same thing in common, is they have an athletic director, first of all, that's been there for a while, but an athletic director who has coaches that fit his exact personality and fit the kind of role that they want their teams to have. Now, and Michigan State, you've had Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo have been there for a long time under Mark Hollis. At Wisconsin, you've had a little bit more change in football, but Paul Chryst basically is a Wisconsin guy, and Greg Gard is an extension of Bo Ryan. So I would put Wisconsin one, and I wouldn't. Michigan State wouldn't be that far behind.
So if they're the premier then, and they're in the same division as Nebraska, does it automatically, maybe not automatically mean, but if you come in second, that's no slouch, I guess?
Well, I think it's year by year. Like if you take football, for example, there's a couple of those years in there that you look at Nebraska's roster and you look at Wisconsin's roster and you think, okay, how come Nebraska can't beat Wisconsin? I think it also comes down to a culture throughout their athletic departments. And in their two main sports, they have a culture of winning and they have a blueprint on how to win, how to recruit, and they never change from that. And they might not have, you know, Wisconsin might not have a ton of championship banners up in the Kohl Center or at Camp Randall, but don't kid yourself. I think any Nebraska fan would trade the success. You know, they would go for Wisconsin's success over what Nebraska's experienced over the last 15 years. And I think it's okay to say out loud, if you're a Nebraska fan, that, boy, you'd like to have some of the things Wisconsin has or some of the things that Michigan State has. It's okay to say that because those two programs are held in high regard, not only in the Big Ten, but across the country.
Gary Sharp, Hail Varsity Radio. Joining us this morning. And then, so the State of the Husker Nation poll is up on HailVarsity.com. Brandon Vogel's been commissioning that every year. This is the third year for it. One question that popped up, it's a tough one. I don't know if you've taken the poll yet, Gary, but who is the face of Nebraska football in 2017? And it has to be a player. Who comes to mind?
Well, and it's a question where you just can't go, oh, it's this, which is first time in a while, and we had Brandon on our show on Thursday, and we got into this discussion. I think the face of 2017, because Brandon was talking, and I know Aaron's talking, okay, who do we put on the yearbook? I'm going to say it's the head coach this year.
But it has to be a player.
Oh, well,
I agree with you, and we can get into that, but player-wise...
I think the player wise, at the face of the program is Stanley Morgan.
Yep, that's who I picked. Yeah, but you don't feel great about it, right? Like it's not a slam dunk.
Yeah, because you know the thing with Stanley Morgan is Stanley Morgan's an NFL guy. Stanley Morgan is the real deal. I mean, he is. When you walk onto the practice field here in the spring, Stanley Morgan stands out. But how many people, honestly, that pull on their number 8 jerseys on Saturdays and head to the stadium know what Stanley Morgan looks like?
No, that's
but
a good point.
He's the guy. And it's interesting because the two number 8s this year are the two best guys in the program in Stanley Morgan and Chryst Jones.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I kind of cheat a little bit too. I mean, as of today, I picked Nick Gates. I think come fall camp, by default, the face of the Husker program is going to be the winner between Tanner Lee and Patrick O'Brien. But I'm with you. I think it's a coach. You said Mike Riley, but I'm going Bob Diaco because all eyes are going to be on him and his new 3-4 scheme and the energy that he brings. I think that he can be the face for the 2017 season.
I will give you that, and I also tell you that I know you're being nice, TJ, but the quarterback job is done.
Thank you.
Introduce yourself. I was going to ask you about that.
Okay.
I agree about Diaco, and he's Mr. High Energy, and I love the way he teaches football. And he's got a linebacker crew, and that whole defense that have to come along. And I think six practices, they like where they're at. I mean, they weren't going to just come out of the gates. But I say Mike Riley because finally this is the Mike Riley era, in my opinion, beginning. Because you had the transition of one coach to another and some lingering feelings, and then last year was kind of the end when 30-plus seniors left that had gone through the roller coaster of emotions in their career at Nebraska, and now this program is you. You fine-tuned it for 2 years, you've taken your lumps, you've made changes, You now finally have a quarterback that you feel like can run your offense. You've made a drastic change on defense. The tap is running on Mike Riley, and why not make him the face of the football program? And I think that's okay to do, because I think you get the sense through the first part of spring, and you know it's spring, they don't keep score, and you don't want to go over the top, that he is more comfortable now than he's been at Nebraska with what he has on the field. Now, what does that do in the fall? That's, you know, there's that next step. But I think he finally is at a comfort level with the talent in the program and the way they're headed and the organization that they have to get better. And I think he also understands Nebraska and understands how to win the Big Ten better.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. The spring game shaping up to be a huge recruiting weekend. And you say that a lot, right? Like, oh, this is a huge recruiting weekend. Insert weekend here whenever Nebraska gets recruits. But this one feels a little bit different, right? This one feels really significant. Would you say that Nebraska right now is completely maximized from a recruiting standpoint? Like, could you expect them to do better in terms of getting guys on campus than what they have coming up in this spring game?
Well, I think in the spring game, you know, you look at last year's guys that were here for the spring game, it turned out to be pretty important for the amount of them that said yes to be in the class of 2017. I think Nebraska can be a little bit choosy here because, you know, they're going to have probably about 15 scholarships. But they can also, you know, they also got some numbers that they have to fill in. I think they've done a very good job. I think the lesson they learned last year, and I know that, Mark, you and I talked about this, is maybe they waited too long on some guys that they were chasing. When they didn't get such a great sense that, hey, Nebraska's not going to be my choice, instead of moving on, Nebraska kind of hung on. And I think they've learned that of guys that get a feel right away if they're interested in Nebraska. If they are, keep it going and try and reel them in. If they're not, if you don't get that sense at all, don't bang your head against the wall. Move on quickly. And I think Nebraska in this recruiting cycle will do some of that. And there's going to be wins and there's going to be losses, and they're going to happen early, whether it be a quarterback from Idaho or a running back named TJ Pledger. But you have to move on. But I think having 15 scholarships will really amp Nebraska's recruiting up because they can be a little bit choosy. But yeah, that spring game list is going to be pretty important. And I think you'll probably see, maybe not between now and the spring game, but I think either a spring game day or shortly after, Nebraska will add a couple of more to this class.
Gary, which position is your greatest concern for 2017? That is a poll question on HailVarsity.com. Far and away, offensive line is leading that at 64%. Do you agree, or do you have a greater concern area for a different position group?
If you're going to group the whole offensive, like, there's one side of the offensive line that I'm okay. Left side of the offensive line, I'm fine. I think Michael Decker has locked it into football, focus on football, nothing else, no outside distraction. That's my job, and he's had a nice start to the spring. I worry about right tackle, and I worry about that greatly. And that's kind of been, you know, last year we thought we had it locked down. Didn't happen. Became a revolving door. Who knows what's going to happen there. I think you have to – the linebackers are another area. There's some really good young talent there. I just think the change – there's some guys swimming right now. The offensive line. It starts with the offensive line, and if the offensive line – you go 5 to 7 guys, and you're secure there, and you know what you're going to get every single Saturday, it changes that team so much. You know, we've seen that the passing game looks different than it has in 10 years in the spring, in terms of there's not many balls on the ground, there's balls that are being thrown right into people's hands. You know, outside of one practice, the quarterbacks have been really, really good. But you're right, the offensive line is a place where I think all Nebraska fans every year, that's your concern. Until you see it and you have no problem saying that's the old Nebraska offensive line that we've been used to.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. You brought up linebacker and how some guys are swimming in it. And it's funny when you hear about the profile that Nebraska is looking for, the physical profile they're looking for at outside linebacker, the description is always basically the perfect athlete. You know, it's just like, oh, they're just looking for a guy that's 6'3", 6'4", 230 pounds, and runs a 4.5. Like, okay, those guys aren't growing on trees. You know, they're kind of difficult to come by. Do you think Nebraska has on their current roster guys that fit the outside linebacker profile, or is that the spot inside and outside? Is that the spot that you have the most concern about specifically?
Well, I think you've got some guys that look the part, whether they be the Alexanders or the Jeffersons or some, and the Mo Berry, some of those people. I think the terminology and just lining up has been kind of an issue on the outside. You know, you feel good about Marcus Newby, but you're absolutely right, Mark. You're looking for that perfect athlete at that position, and it's tough to find that perfect athlete, so you have to mold them. But watch the trio of linebackers. I think somebody that might surprise, but probably won't really surprise fans when you get into it, is Chris Weber finally gets a chance to play. Chris Weber is a really good football player, and Chris Weber kind of fits that middle linebacker position at Nebraska. Kind of underrated. He's a Nebraska guy. You don't think much about him, and the next thing you know, you pick up the stat sheet at the end of the game. He's got 15 tackles. So the inside part I'm okay with. It's the outside part that will be a continual challenge, kind of to get a comfortability. I'll tell you one other guy, and I know we're talking about linebackers. I want to go down to the front three. Peyton Newell may have shown up as well. We spent all time leading up to spring talking about guys that would benefit from the move to the 3-4. You know, not only probably a move to the 3-4, but a whole new lease on life. Peyton Newell has had a really, really good spring, and that's a guy we've been waiting for. I know it's spring. It matters more coming up in August, but watch Peyton Newell over the course of the next couple of weeks and keep your eye on him when you get to the spring game.
Hey, Gary, before we get you out of here, I just wanted your take, since you were all over it Wednesday night with former Nebraska assistant coach Craig Smith. Just to short and sweet of it, did it appear that he was going to Drake, but then a late push by South Dakota was able to sway him to stay?
Yeah, he was set to go to Drake and move on to the Missouri Valley Conference, and the South Dakota athletic director, David Herbster, who used to be at Omaha, stepped up. They made a financial package to keep him there. He's got a really good roster. They'll be preseason favorites to win the league and maybe make the NCAA tournament. And, you know, Craig is one of those guys that's going to be in high demand. He's a talented coach. Mm-hmm. And when you're at a mid-major program and you're in the conference of the Summit League, there's always conferences above you looking. And, you know, if you're thinking about a Power 5 job, it's tough to go from South Dakota straight to a Power 5 job. But if you're going from maybe a Drake or some or a school in the MAC conference, it's easier to get a Power 5. But Craig Smith is an up-and-comer. I mean, what he's done in 3 years in Vermillion, that was a dumpster fire when he took over. And he has improved that greatly. And, you know, South Dakota did a great job to hold on to him and keep him. And, you know, it'll probably be something you'll go through next year. You'll have a good year and people will come calling again.
Gary Sharp on Hail Varsity Radio. Gary, thanks a lot for the time, man. We'll talk to you again next Saturday.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, there's Gary. And, it's funny how Craig Smith, you know, you think about Nebraska ball's kind of slide. It's coincided with his departure, right?
A little bit.
I mean, but it's weird because basketball assistants, I think it's such little – they have how much impact can they really have? A basketball assistant compared to like a football assistant, like your offensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator, huge impact on your performance.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same with basketball assistants? Because it is interesting to note how Nebraska's performance has slipped since that guy left.
No, it is. I mean, but you find the right assistant.
You don't hear about that. Like name basketball assistants are not household names.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? You can name offensive and defensive coordinators for a lot of different schools in football, but in basketball, you have no idea.
Yeah, like, I mean, the top guy to Barry Collier was always Scott Spinelli, but I don't think he's ever been a head coach anywhere.
Excuse me. Yeah, interesting to note. All right, winding down hour number
Hold
two
on
Hail Varsity.
Craneck, before we go, can I tell you about seatbelts?
Please.
Let's say you decide to make a quick trip to the store. You climb into the driver's seat, start the car, and the seatbelt indicator blinks and sounds. You decide you don't need to use it. think you're the only one that suffers if you wear a seatbelt or not? You are wrong. Family, friends, and coworkers suffer if you are injured or killed in a crash. Click it or ticket now, reducing injuries and saving lives every day. This is a message from the Nebraska Department of Roads of Highway Safety Office.
Thank you, TJ.
You're very welcome.
I feel informed now. Thank you. So buckle up. Last segment of Hail Varsity Radio coming up next.
Now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week. What?
Hail Varsity Radio Saturday edition rolls on. Mark Kranak alongside TJ Finning. Chris Schmidt is out today. He's in McCook. And why would you not want to be in McCook?
No, why wouldn't you be? And why wouldn't you want to go to Sartor Hamann, Kranak? They're the exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. Pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds, except for they are grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. Pure-grown diamonds have all the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds, and many of our customers think they are much more beautiful. They are eco-friendly and 100% sustainable, all for 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. So come and see why pure-grown diamonds have become one of the biggest sellers in Sartor Hamann's history. You have to see them to believe it. SartorHamann.com.
Perfect. Sounds good. Where the hell did South Carolina come from, by the way?
That is a good question, man.
Like, have you ever watched a South Carolina basketball game?
No.
Before this year?
Like, no.
So far off the radar.
Oh, way off.
They dropped. Dude, they dropped four of their last six in the regular season. And then they got bounced in the first game against Alabama in the SEC tournament. So they lost 5 of 7 down the stretch.
Yeah.
And then they just roll in and knock off Marquette, knock off Duke.
Yeah, there was a stat for the teams that were left in the Sweet 16 that momentum, it really isn't that big of a deal. Like, you think it might be for Michigan, but, like, of the teams that were left, most of them had, like you said, for South Carolina, 4 or 5 losses coming into the tournament.
They had dropped 5 of their last 7 and didn't look good.
And since now they're that time, one away from the Final Four.
It beat Duke by 7, beat Baylor by 20. And here they are, Elite Eight. Crazy.
Frank Martin, man.
Like, who's the coach? I don't even know who the coach is. You know what I mean? I know zero about the
South
Carolina
basketball
program.
Do you know who Frank Martin is? Former K-State basketball coach? Crazy guy?
Well, you didn't know that until this year is what I'm saying, right? Like,
well, I knew that because he's a crazy guy and, you know, I wanted to keep tabs on him. But, yeah, I would never actually watch a South Carolina Gamecocks basketball game. That's for sure.
No. Interesting times, and you wonder if Nebraska is going to get back there. Nebraska being the only school that has never won a tournament game, ever.
0-7 all time. And the NCAA tournament's been, what, around since 1955, around there?
At least.
Because the NIT used to be the go-to tournament, but then they created the NCAA tournament. So I think it was in the 1950s there. So, man, that's an embarrassing stat to be a part of. No other way around it.
Nebraska, it's interesting. Two scholarships open right now with Jariah Horn and with Fuller transferring. They're in on some guys that they're in on a JUCO point guard right now. There's a chance that this guy comes in and plays next year.
Yeah, and what we like most about him right away is that he shoots about 48% from three. What is his team lacking? Shooters. They need shooters. Yeah. So if you can shoot 48% from three to provide some spacing and hit down some threes for this team, much obliged. We'll take you.
Yeah, and I wonder if Nebraska's going to fill both spots this year. And have those guys actually be eligible this year.
Yeah.
Because at this point, you're left with late bloomers in high school, and there's a few of those that absolutely happens.
Yeah,
you know, and JUCO guys, but you're sort of like primary known commodities are already spoken for. They're already signed, so you got to kind of dig deep. At this point, there's not a ton of players available.
Yeah, well, the transfer list for college basketball is insane. I mean, they've had around 700 the last two seasons in the offseason. Obviously, JUCO guys could play right away, and graduate transfers could play right away, so getting one of those two guys would be good. I know Nebraska is in on four-star point guard Mark Smith, or combo guard Mark Smith. He is unsigned, and he's, I think, number 72 on top 150 Rivals. right. And Nebraska's high on his list, so we'll see how that plays out. So he could play right away too, being a true freshman.
Another Illinois guy, right?
Yep, another one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's rare that a top 150 guy would still be unaccounted yep. for and unsigned.
Very true. I think there's only about five of those guys left in the top 150 who are unsigned.
Right. So, man, and just after watching the tournament, that's the thing. Your fortunes can change pretty damn quick in basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so who knows? One of those guys, maybe it's Mark Smith, maybe it's the JUCO guy in California, it could completely change your program immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like, well, get them in the program, develop them. No. They can come in and completely change your entire program. So who knows? Maybe Nebraska yep. will get a W. Maybe they'll get to the NCAA tournament and get a win.
Wouldn't that be special?
Wouldn't that be? We would talk about it, I'm sure.
We would.
All right. TJ, thanks for filling in, man.
No problem.
All right. That's TJ Henning. I'm Mark Kranak, Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday. Talk to you next week.